There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
I get so hyped every time I hear John Daly.
You know what?
Rip and rip it.
That's pretty creative. Props to you guys on that intro.
I appreciate that.
It is that cool. Was creative. Who was it? Who decided?
That was a late night for Jordan on Cameo.
Well done.
Really late night. Got it done, though. Pretty sweet.
What's the first guy's name? Brilliantly Dumb?
Yeah, Bob Does Sports.
Yeah.
He's like 6'4", too.
Really?
He's got a longer torso.
I don't know why that's
important. No, he's not. Remember when I thought he was like 6'4", and Andy was like, dude, no way. And then I met him in person, and I was like, yeah, he's 6'4". He's like, no way. He's like 5'8".
So he is actually 5'8".
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Long torso, though.
And then DeChambeau, Bruce Buffer, and John Daly.
Yeah, I got those other ones, but.
I don't know if I can say this. I'm going to say it. Because I really like him a lot, but the worst one we got back was Nick Hardy.
Really?
I'm a big Nick Hardy fan because we played him in DraftKings 1 year, and I follow him on the course, and I just saw when he did a 3M. I think he's awesome. We sent him one, and it was horrible. But shout out Nick Hardy, because
I
love Nick Hardy.
I room with him sometimes.
He's so
cool. I love Nick Hardy. I play fantasy football with him. So, Nick, improve your Cameo.
I'll show you. Remind me after. I'll show you.
Okay.
You'll be like, yeah,
we'll put it on your phone.
I think you should just bring it up right now and put it on the mic.
Oh, it's on there.
I have it. I could. Should I do it?
Yeah.
It's not bad. It doesn't say anything bad. You can just tell it's like.
Hey, I love it.
Hey, I'll tell you this. You only tease the ones you love.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't tease the people that you don't like. The people that you don't like, you usually stay away from. Here. We love Nick Hardy.
I love Nick Hardy. I'll play this so they can hear it, and then you can see it.
Andy, Tong, and Jordan, good morning from Arizona. Just a beautiful morning here, getting ready to start the day. Just want to start off by saying thank you for being a fan and loving my game. I appreciate that, using me in DraftKings. I hope I come through for you guys a lot this season. Congrats on starting your golf podcast. I just want to say to all your listeners, get ready for these guys. They're going to kill it on the golf podcast game, and no better way to spend your time, 30, 40 minutes in your car a day listening to these guys and their podcasts. I guarantee you it's going to be fun. No better time for me when I'm in the car listening to other golf podcasts. I love talking golf, listening to golf. Can't get enough of it. So, listeners, get ready for these guys. They're going to be great and fun and a good time. So good luck to them. And, go PGA Tour and, stay tuned. Stay tuned for my future. I appreciate you guys following.
Whoever's
all the best.
Whoever's in the background started laughing at him.
It's probably his wife. His wife is great, by the way.
So I love Nick Hardy, but I couldn't use anything from
him. You can't.
Nick, but now I have this amazing video of Nick Hardy on my phone.
Yeah, give it to Feels.
Bring the energy.
You want me to send it to you? All right, I'll send it to you.
I'll forward it to him.
And you can tell him.
Bring
it
up on
Nick
your phone together next time.
What?
Like, what the fuck was this?
Yeah. Dude, I love Nick Hardy.
I should show you
all Big Ten.
Should show you
all world.
After the podcast, I'll show you the last videos and photos that were shared between him, I, and Charlie Danielson, and they're a little more PG-13, maybe rated R.
All right.
That's the late night after hours version of this.
Did we even introduce?
No, we're off to a hot start here. we have a recurring guest here, Jamie Rue, and another gem, one of the hottest names in golf the last couple of weeks here after an incredible trip through a Monday qualifier. So we have Alex Gaugert, better known as Feely, on PGA Tour. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the crib.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Welcome to the podcast.
Tony the Tiger. Jamie.
Yeah.
That's father.
Don't forget Johnny. Don't forget Johnny.
Johnny
Rue over there.
Get a mic in front of your mouth.
Yeah, if you if anybody, which most of our listeners pay attention to golf, has probably seen your name in the past couple weeks, like maybe just a quick intro of who you are and like how the last month has been for your life. I mean, it's just got to be a roller coaster.
Who am I? My name's Alex, father of two, married to a beautiful girl named Aubrey, 7 years.
Congratulations.
Grew up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, played golf at the University of Minnesota. Played golf on the Sunshine Tour for a year. Played terrible. Lost my card. Moved to Arizona. Played mini tours for a couple years. Started working with a coach there by the name of Mike Malaska. He was helping me out with my game. Saw a little bit of improvement. Started giving a few lessons at Tonto where I was working to kind of make ends meet along with waiting tables at Saddle Bronc. In early 2019, I always told Eric, so currently I'm caddying for Eric Van Rooyen. I traveled in South Africa with him, and I always told him, like, I'd always love to caddy for you. And early 2019, tournament opened up, and he goes, you want to come caddy for me? And I caddied for him an event, and he says, that was really good. And so, he goes, you want to do 4 more weeks in Qatar, Kenya, Malaysia, and India. So I said, yeah, I'm in. But I can't go to the first week because I had qualified for the TaylorMade Invitational out at Pebble. So my wife and I go out to Pebble. Then I go home from Kenya, Malaysia, and India. And it's great. We missed the first cut, and then we finished top 10 in our last two and kind of offered me the job. And kind of away we went.
So yeah, you've been doing it for like, what, 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, this is year, what is it, 19, 20, 21, 22?
Five.
Almost 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I always tell people I'm not a real caddy because I haven't been fired.
And were you guys roommates in college, or were you friends in college?
So
or?
Good friends in college, yeah. We were both in each other's wedding. Never roomed together, actually, in college.
But you guys dated for a little while, correct?
You can call it that.
Keep going.
And then we lived together in South Africa and traveled all over South Africa playing together. And I kept missing cuts and practicing on Saturday and Sunday. And then we'd go to the next event and run the same routine. And he kept getting better and better and better. And I kind of was staying the same and maybe getting a little worse at the time and moved back to Arizona. Wife and I got married and started a family.
I mean, doing a little research, I mean, obviously, like, your wife is stunning and your kids are awesome. So, golfer names too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I told my wife when we had kids, so my brother and my sister are both A names. So, my brother is Austin, my sister's Annie, I'm Alex, my wife is Aubrey, and I said our kids are going to be named with A names. And so Annika was kind of brought up. We never found out the gender before we were having kids, and we were talking names, and for a boy, we had Ashton for the first one and Annika for a girl. And Annika really came out because my wife has got a decent bit of Swedish heritage to her, and so she really fell in love with that, and I thought it was a cool name because it's got some golf ties and whatever, and then second one comes along and we're kind of talking about names again, and Arnold came up and she's like, yeah, that's a good strong name. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And then finally, like, after we had them and enough people started, you know, kind of commenting, I'm like, Annika and Arnie, oh, golf. I'm like, yeah. So no, I think they're good names. They're not names that are used really often, which I like, and good strong names, and got a little Swedish tie to Annika, and so yeah, checked all the boxes.
That's awesome. So, and you've had golf in your life, your whole life, right? I mean, your dad is a teaching pro, and
yeah, my dad. So my dad bought a course where we grew up in Lake Geneva. I don't know when he bought it, but I think he owned a portion of it for 20 years. So we grew up on the what hole was it? It was the 7th hole. And so he was able to drive a cart to work every day, and we grew up on the golf course. My mom did the flowers. We hung out in the back of a maintenance cart in our Power Ranger chairs, and you know, late night we'd go out with our little clubs, and my sister, brother, and I. So my brother's 13 months older than me, so we're really close, and then my sister's about 26 months younger. So we were all in high school actually at the same time, and so golf's kind of bled into us, and I love the game. It's outdoorsy, it's competitive, teaches you a lot about life, and it's I don't think there's a better game out there and a game you can play for your whole life. So it's a good one to be intertwined with.
Totally.
How did you end up in Minnesota? So I imagine you must have been obviously really good at the high school level to play D1 golf, and then what was the how do you decide to come be a Gopher?
You know, we just to kind of clarify too, we had Angus on, so it was an interesting conversation to have Angus. Yeah. Like, how in the hell did you come from England to Minnesota? But you're a little closer, but it's an interesting story as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
So my dad went to Madison. He played at Madison, so there was obviously a little part of me that kind of wanted to go to Madison, and so I would call myself an A-minus, you know, high school player. I finished sixth a couple times at state, never won state, was never a massive world beater, but I was kind of small. My freshman year of college, I was 6 foot, 150 pounds.
Oh, wow.
So I grew 4 inches and 35 pounds in college.
Oh, I hit it a little further?
A little bit.
Gained, yeah, a little speed.
So, I mean, I always tell people I hit puberty at 25, I was okay, and I got recruited by a few schools. Minnesota offered me a little bit of scholarship. Madison offered me a little scholarship. Illinois told me that I could, you know, walk on, probably have a spot with no scholarship.
Shout out Nick Hardy.
Yeah, would have played with Nick, but Marquette had offered me some, and I decided to go to Minnesota because I love the coach that had recruited me, Brad James. I always wanted to play professional golf, and he told me one time, he goes, "We're only recruiting kids that want to play professional golf." He goes, "I don't care how you play in college. We're going to mold you to be into the best professional golfer we can." And when he said that, kind of a light went off. Well, fast forward, you know, a couple months, and 2 months before I got there, he had called me and said he accepted the coaching position to lead Golf Australia. Mm. So Brad James went over to Australia to pretty much oversee the entire country because they got a government fund that helps produce golfers from age, I don't know when it starts, call it 8 to 12, somewhere in there, and they start to give them lessons, psychologists, pay for them to get in tournaments, travel to get in tournaments, all this. And he oversees that now, and you can kind of see all the products that he's producing over there. So he does a really good job. And at the time, their teams are really, really good. He was recruiting a lot of good players. And so that was really enticing for me to come to Minnesota because of him, and ended up not working out that way. But it was all meant to be. Met my wife. And just make the best out of each situation.
That's really cool. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the coach that you wanted to come play for left, but it sounds like you had a pretty good experience. I mean, looking at your bio, you had some good years, right? Finished pretty high in some tournaments, and
yeah,
good scoring average, etc.
Yeah, freshman year and sophomore year were definitely a little bit of a struggle. I was intended to redshirt my freshman year, kind of what Brad James and I had talked about. Didn't play the first kind of couple tournaments in the fall, and then the last tournament of the fall, they were like, "Alex, we want you to play." And I was playing decent back home, and I wasn't ready. But went and played and scraped it together, and played in maybe a few more events in the spring, but nothing very good. And sophomore year, the kind of same. And then, but I kind of got to freshman year, and it was one of those things where I kind of let the chains off and partied a little bit, maybe too much, and let go a little bit too much. And sophomore year, a little bit of the same in the fall. And then going into my spring season, I decided not to drink for the entire spring season and just totally grind, and I definitely saw some improvement there. And then going into junior and senior season, I definitely played a little bit better.
Going up on a little bit of a tangent, but when did they build the practice facility over there?
That was
probably, that before or after or during?
That was after, 3-4 years after I graduated.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you graduate?
2014.
Okay, so you graduated in 2014, and then how soon after that did you start, you know, getting into caddying for Eric? And
started caddying for him in 2019.
Yeah,
so I had about 5 years. About
5 years in
right between. After school, I went to South Africa to do Q school. Got through Q school over there, played the year over there. Didn't play worth a damn, and then
that's a professional tour in South Africa only. Yeah. In South Africa. Or
yeah,
is it like the challenge tour, or what is it?
They have some co-sanctioned events. So they have some co-sanctioned events with the DP World Tour. They have some co-sanctioned events with the challenge tour. But they have their own set tour throughout the year that yeah. has their own points list, has world ranking points. That's what I encourage any aspiring professional to do, is when they're going to turn professional, play in as many Q schools as you can. Get status on some tour. I don't care if it's Canada, Latin, Corn Ferry, Challenge Tour, DP World Tour, Asian Tour, Sunshine Tour, Japanese Tour, Chinese Tour. I don't care what it is. You get status on some tour with world ranking points, and that starts to open up doors if you play good. Because you can go play as good as you want on the Dakotas Tour.
You can win every event. Doesn't give you shit.
Yeah, you might put $120,000 in the bank, but... What does that do for you?
Doesn't have anywhere for you to play the
exactly.
next year.
Doesn't get you on to more opportunities and bigger and better things. And that's where I think you try to get on a tour if you're an aspiring tour professional, to get on any tour and just go play. You know, that's what Eric did. I mean, Eric spent, I think, 3 years on the Sunshine Tour, spent 1 year on the Challenge Tour. I think he spent 3 years on the European Tour, and now he's in year three on the PGA Tour. So, I mean... I love his story. He's just a hardworking individual, and he's just kind of went from nothing to, I mean, you didn't even know what the Sunshine Tour was, and now he's playing the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. And it's just like you got to start somewhere. And
yeah.
And that's where you get status somewhere and just go from there.
And so, I mean, you guys kind of took different paths after the Sunshine Tour then. So he was, you know, did he win a couple events, or did he was just finishing well, or?
So he won one event on the Sunshine Tour. And so cool part about him is he's won on four different tours. He's won on the Sunshine Tour, one on the Challenge Tour, one on the DP World Tour, and now one on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. So there isn't many people who can say they've done that.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of people who just go straight to the PGA Tour because they're good coming out of the womb.
Yeah, but that, I mean, it's just... It's a testament to, you know, how hard he's had to grind and how many different challenges he's had to overcome. But also, you know, he's had great people to do it with. So, I mean, you guys have been buddies now for what, like almost coming up on 10 years probably,
yeah,
right?
10 plus years, yeah. Dude, since 2010.
Is it harder? You got to maintain professional distance, I'm sure. And I would think it'd be better to have your really good buddy caddy for you. What's your opinion, you know, having someone that's just a hired caddy guy that they don't have a relationship and build one with versus, you know, doing it for your really good buddy?
I think trust. And, you know, Eric and I, number one thing that we had kind of talked about when I started caddying for him is we got to be 100% honest in all situations, whether it's business, whether it's personal. You know, it gets emotional at times, and it has, but you know, I think when you're 100% honest with, you know, your boss or your friend, you know, that goes a long way. And
you're one of the least codependent people I've ever met, and I think that's gotta be awesome for your relationship with Eric, because that transparency and honesty is probably what a lot of people lack if they want to tell the guy what he thinks he wants to hear, which does nobody any good whatsoever, right?
No, it doesn't push the needle forward. It doesn't help anybody. And, you know, I think that complete and utter honesty goes a long way in life. And I'll say I sometimes get in trouble with it with my wife, but, you know.
I mean, you made a kind of a a little bit of an off-the-cuff comment surrounding like not never being quote-unquote fired from being a caddy, but I also think that's because of your relationship, right? So you guys have such a strong relationship that you feel more confident being able to tell him exactly what you're thinking than maybe somebody that's really that is reliant and just strictly golf-wise or just caddying-wise. You have a much deeper relationship than...
Like, I got to think, too, feels that, like, how many people surround you guys? And then how does that work, the dynamic of these other guys that are coming in as a whatever kind of coach? I mean, how does that work? Is it
for sure? There's a lot of communication sent my way to kind of take it off his plate. Whether it's the psychologist talking to me, whether it's the swing coach talking to me, whether it's the short game coach talking to me. So I'll kind of feed a lot of those conversations and hear them out and kind of encourage what I believe should be inputted into the system. And, you know,
I mean, that's a tremendous amount of trust that he has for you.
And, you know, I've messed up a few times and I'm okay to admit it, but all I can tell him is I can look myself in the eye when I go to bed every night and say, you know what, dude, I gave it my all. That's what I got today. So,
yeah. And you're making those decisions based on trying to get him better.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters, right? Yeah. So an honest mistake can be forgiven if it's all done with the intent of him getting better.
What are some of the so we just did an episode a couple episodes ago on caddies, because I had caddied for Angus and Andy had caddied for, does he know Ben? Have you met Ben Siegel?
Never met Ben Siegel. I know the name, though.
Andy had caddied for Ben in the was it the Minnesota
State Open?
State Open. Yep.
Ben plays on Latino America.
Yep. Okay. We had talked about just what it's like caddying for professional golfer and somebody at your level. Like, what are the things that people maybe at home don't understand about like professional caddies? That my mom and sister asked me this question the other day. I was like, they can't use range finders. Like, was the big one that for somebody that doesn't know golf and you know watches golf. And you go, yeah, they're actually like pulling out a book of the course and they're walking off to get the exact yardage and doing all these things that
which I don't get it all, by the way. I don't get that whatsoever. I mean, why not have a rangefinder?
One tournament a year you can use a rangefinder, right?
Yeah, PGA Championship.
Do you think this should be allowed?
I think, yes, I do. The books are the books are good enough where everyone's getting, you know, the same number.
Would it speed up pace of play?
It would speed up pace of play on off the map golf shots. So say you're playing five and you hit it down six. Now
you're trying to triangulate something.
Go over there, find your ball. Now go find a sprinkler head on that hole and then, you know, get a yardage and, you know, where you just go over there and you shoot the flag and say, okay, we got this to the flag on this angle. We got X number to the front. You know, this is our cover, this is our back edge and kind of go from there. That's where it would speed up play. Where when you hit it down the middle of the fairway, there's enough sprinkler heads, close enough proximity where you're going to be able to get a number relatively fast. It's on those miss hits and those off the map shots that it would really speed up play.
So I kind of derailed your question a little bit. Is there anything that people wouldn't necessarily presume or understand about intricacies of your job?
I mean, there is a piece to be said about what is it? Keep up, shut up.
Show up, keep up, shut up.
Show up, keep up, shut up. There's a piece to be said about that. And at the end of the day, all these professionals, they know how to play golf. They know how to hit shots. They know what they see. I think sometimes the newer professionals, especially to the PGA Tour and even sometimes the web, you know, they rely on their caddy too much and they don't play their game enough because they're letting their caddy decide what they want to do. And at the end of the day, like I said, they know how to play golf. Where I think the best relationships are the ones where the player goes to the caddy when they're kind of in between. You know, dude, I'm in between 8 and 7 here. What are you thinking? You know, call it 10, 20% of the time. And then we talk through the shot where most of the time they can, I mean, and a lot of the times you can hit an arrangement of 3 clubs. Well, if you want to hit this club, don't hit it as hard. Yeah. If you want to hit this club, hit it even softer.
Trying to hit a cut, hit this club if you're trying to.
And so when you get some crosswinds and you're going to ride the wind or, you know, do whatever, that's when you kind of get in between, and that's where I think the best relationships between players and caddies kind of evolve, is when they're kind of in between. That's when they go to their caddy. Okay, well, we got a back pin here. I'm in between 8 and 7. Well, you know, 8's always going to leave us short of the hole. You know, if we're Friday afternoon and we need to make a birdie, you know, let's hit the 7. This still can pitch, you know, 172, and it'll still release back there, whatever the conversation is. But that's where I think the best relationships, and the – I don't need to have input on every single shot. Like I said, he knows how to play golf. You got to sometimes, you know, take the reins off and ride your horse. Let him go. But there is a dynamic to when you need to step in. There's been times he's playing great and he's just being a baby, where, you know, you got to slap him in the face. And there's sometimes when he's not playing as great and you need to give him a hug. And I think to be able to read those situations is part of being a caddy. You know, being a caddy, the job description is very gray. So you wear a lot of hats. You wear a mini psychologist. You wear a mini friend. You wear a caddy hat. You know, you wear a golf swing hat, you know, in all these different little elements. And I think the ability to navigate that is kind of fun, in my opinion.
I won't ask you who some skeptical relationships are, but who are some other players on tour that you've recognized have, like, you know, great caddy player relationship?
One I look up to a lot is John Rahm and Adam Hayes. I think Adam Hayes does a really, really phenomenal job. I just think he's well-spoken. He's strong in what he says. I think being very strong in what you say is very important in a caddy, and, you know, being okay with messing up, where some of the caddies that I don't want to say not respect, but some of the caddies that I would question their ability is the ones who aren't very strong, who are just, you call me yes man, you know.
Just don't respond with conviction.
Yeah.
Like, the player wants to have
give
conviction.
Give it to him.
Yeah.
Give it to him. You know, it's a 700. It's perfect. Hit me a 187 and it's perfect. Go. And where it's like, well, what do you think? Well, I think it's a, you know, do you think it's a strong 8 or, you know, mini 7? Well, just give them an answer. They sometimes just, when they're in between, you just need to, you know, tell them exactly what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've learned a lot of that from a few different caddies. So that's, Adam Hayes is really good at that.
Are there any, I've noticed recently, like, I was talking on the golf course with some buddies the other day, all these, maybe not crazy, but like extra level things that caddies and players are doing nowadays. A couple examples I heard were like that tool that gets the exact wind direction, and they've been talking about, like, golfers now wearing Whoops to see their heart rate, you know, as they're getting ready to take shots and all that stuff. Like, what do you think about kind of just new age stuff that might be changing the game, whether for better or for worse? Like, have you seen any really crazy things out there? It's like, okay, guys, we're probably taking this thing a little too far, right? Or are there any crazy things you've been seeing out there?
I mean, as far as too far, I don't know if there is a spot for that, because what people don't realize is the general golfing public is how tight the margins are. They are so tight. You can play good on a given week and have a bad break and miss the cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the margins are so tight. So you're always looking to shave, you know, call it a quarter of a stroke off your average. And a quarter of a stroke, you know, adds up to one stroke over the course of, you know, four tournaments or four rounds. And, you know, that can be the difference, where I don't know if there's anything taken too far, and everyone's avenue and everyone's journey is a little bit different. Some people need some assistance with putting or chipping or wedge play or iron play or long irons, or, you know, between 250 and 275 or off the tee. I don't know if there's a thing that, you know, takes it too far. You just, as a player and as a team, I think you have to prioritize what's the lowest hanging fruit here. And we got to attack that. Like, for us right now, is we got to improve our wedge play a little bit. where he's starting to drive it phenomenal. He drove it so good at Greensboro. What was that, last week at Wyndham? And probably didn't wedge it close enough and didn't putt great the first day. But, you know, if you start to drive it like that consistently, he started working with Sean Foley about 6-8 weeks ago, and he's seen a really nice improvement. And if he continues that and starts swinging it the way he did circa 19 and 20, he's going to be good.
So a lot of our audience tend to be, you know, club players, you know, probably a little bit better than average players on average, I would say. What is something that's happening on tour right now that you can kind of see happening more, you know, growing within golf in general? Like, I think I saw something regarding like aim point and those kinds of things. Is there anything on tour that's really kind of taking off that's, you know, maybe going to happen throughout golf or spread down to, you know, I think of like decade or something like that?
I don't know. Not off the cuff. I can't think of any in particular, but my biggest advice to the average to better golfer is to know where the wind's at. I think a lot of people think that they know where it's at, but it's, you know, a lot of times just a swirl where when I even play recreationally and I'm taking merch off Jamie.
Who won last time? Who won last time?
What happened on 16?
Well, we'll come back to that, but what, who paid last time in the merch game?
I did.
Okay. Continue with your answer to your question.
I'm just setting you up.
we're going to get into that story for sure.
Just knowing where the wind's at, you know, yeah. Whether it's straight off the right or whether it's in off the right. I mean, that at least for the better golfers, where the call it the 12 plus handicap, where they don't have enough control, where you get into those single digits handicaps and you're like, okay, I'm going to draw this one with the wind to get a little more out of it, or I'm going to fade this one back into it to take a little bit off of it. They have that, start to have that ability to be able to do that. And that's what I would, you know, advise most, you know, single digits handicaps to know. It's pretty simple to know.
Like one of our first rounds, I asked you a question about, hey, should I flight this? Should I hit this? And I think it was probably a 4 or 5 at the time. And your response was, dude, pick one shot and hit that same shot every time. So what handicap do you think you have to be to start to say, okay, I'm going to draw this or cut it back into the wind? Like, how, what do you need to be to start hitting those shots? Or maybe you're just saying that to me.
I'd say that's like a 3-4 handicap. You know, someone with a little more speed, you know, someone who's got a club head speed of 108 to 108 plus with a driver. Because that's when you can start to kind of maneuver it and use spin as your friend. Where, you know, in my opinion, I like to build my clubs to spin as much as possible. Because I can always take spin off by hitting more club, flighting it, not hitting it as hard, things like that. Where if you got a pitching wedge that knuckles on you, how you gonna add spin to that? You're not going to. So I'm always a fan of having as much spin as possible. Not as much spin as possible, but on the higher threshold of spin, because I can always take it off.
That was Tiger's deal too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Said he was always good at taking.
I mean, Tiger's like lofts are way more traditional too than ever, right? Like that's changed in equipment recently. Is back in the day, a pitching wedge might have been like 48, 47 degrees. Now they're like, some of them are 44 degrees.
Yeah.
You go get a PXG and they're 24 degrees.
Yeah.
So 7
I hit these far.
Yeah, exactly.
It works for people.
It's like,
oh, yeah, it sells golf clubs.
When I was working
sure.
as assistant in Arizona, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, clubs would come out and you put them on the track. I mean, oh, hit your 8-iron. Okay. Hit my 8-iron, it goes 102 yards. And then you hit this 8-iron and it goes
114.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man, I baked up 15 yards. Well, sir, you're actually hitting a 6-iron.
Yeah. So we for sure want to get into talking about the 3M. I have one really random question before. You're obviously around caddies and professional golfers all the time. Do the general golfing community believe that you should be able to take golf balls out of fairway divots?
We were having this conversation before we started recording.
I would say if there's a vote, if you put a vote on your member guest podcast right now, I would say.
Well, I want professional golfers. I don't want, you know, us at home. I want, like, what do the tour, okay, so, like, people that play for money, what do they say?
I would say yes, take them out of divots. I would say you'd get a majority vote there. Because when do you, you don't want to hit a good shot and be penalized.
Right? 100%. Okay, so it is common sense.
Yeah, I would vote for it. But
I can't believe we're talking about rolling back golf balls before that.
It's so gray because what's considered a divot?
And how old is the divot?
Exactly.
So basically what
is
you'd have to say.
Is it sand filled? Well, if it's sand filled, you can't replace it. Well, you know.
What you'd have to say is it's preferred lies in the fairway for any shot.
All time.
All
exactly.
the time.
And that's where it gets so gray. You know, it's like. It's the rules with the greens book now. So in start of 22, they took greens books away from players and caddies, but they still allow you to purchase them. So you can purchase them and look where the pins are and, you know, whatever, but you can't write anything down from the greens book into your yardage book.
So what can you write in there?
It has to be all personal experience on the course. So
who's policing that?
Exactly. It's very gray.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And this is coming from, so you just played at the 3M, correct? Monday qualified. Wait, into
you got,
it.
Like, you got into the 3M?
Yeah. Let's talk about this.
I do want to hear the story about coming from the Barracuda, but I also want to get some personal stuff too.
All right. You go first.
I want to hear. Your show. So you guys finished at the Barracuda Sunday afternoon.
So. Standing in the 15th fairway, and Eric had just bogeyed 14, and on 13 didn't get up and down with a 95% probability get up and down for birdie on 13. He is red hot. If you look at him, you can see the smoke coming out of his ears. And we're on 15. There's this pin 4 over the edge of – there's water in front of the green, 4 over it. He goes, you like landing this thing 3 short? I'm like – no. I like landing this flag high and a little left. And there's a scoreboard right behind the green. He goes, what do you want to finish, fucking 37th? And his name is up there. And it's T37. I'm like, no, but I got some faith in your putter. And he hits it out there to 25, 30 feet. It was kind of tricky to get close to. Greens were firming up later in the day up in the mountains. So, you know, the dry air, you know, gets the greens a little crusty and a little bouncy in the afternoon, and downwind hits out there to 25, 30 feet, 2 putts down there. Next hole's a par 3. Pins on the left side, and he goes, you like it right at it? I'm like, please stay disciplined right to the middle of the green. I mean, it's a 5 iron that he's hitting in there. So it's not like it's a short iron.
He's not hitting 9 or no, pitch or wedge exactly. or something.
And hits in the middle of the green, hoops a 30-footer. Next hole, drivable par 4, hits it to give with a driver, eagle, and this is Stableford. So you can move fast in this in this format.
Was that 8 points for an eagle?
No, 5.
5, yeah.
2 points for a birdie, 5 points for an eagle. Next hole, dead downwind, and balls flying. Can't remember exactly what we had. I think we had like 100, 200 yards, but it's at elevation and downwind. I think he had 8 iron. And hits it to, like, 65 feet. Hoops it. Birdie. 18, hits it in the left weeds. Chops out. Wedges it to 25 feet. Hoops a 25-footer for par. So we had a massive.
Wow.
We had a massive jump.
You're feeling pretty good at
so
this
we,
point.
So we ended up finishing. We were 37th standing in the 15th fairway.
Didn't finish 14. Fucking T37, did we?
No, we didn't. Finished. We were 37th standing in the 15th fairway, 14th fairway, and 14th fairway. I'm trying to just regroup here. 14th fairway. Ended up finishing T6. So great finish. My brother was caddying for Patrick Rogers. So, backtrack, Eric and I had won the Barracuda in 2021. So, it would have been kind of cool. We'd have been the first caddies, first brothers to ever win the same tournament as caddies. So, they're leading kind of all day. I get done. I pop in the shower, go out and watch them, knowing that I got a flight to catch. And they're going to finish around, I think, 5 o'clock, and my flight's at 8. And I got about 2 hours down to Sacramento to catch this red eye. So I'm watching them, coming up 18. Akshay birdies 18 to tie it. And Patrick hits one down the middle, ends up making par. Now we got a playoff. I'm talking to a few of our buddies who are out there watching, and I'm like, guys, I'm not leaving. I'm not catching this flight if they win. So I'm like, I'm screwed. I'm staying. And so the next playoff hole happens. They drive it in a divot.
No. Really?
Did you know this?
I did. I swear to God. They swear drove to God. It, they I wish I knew this. I wish I knew this because I'd look so much smarter than I am.
You watched the Barracuda. Did you watch it this year?
No.
Yes, I did watch it.
I did not.
It. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
So they drove it in a divot. Not a great lie. Chunked out of a divot. Actually hit it to 20 feet. And they didn't get up and down and ended up making bogey. I left right then. And even at this point, after they had signed their scorecards and whatnot, I mean, it was 5:45 and my flight's at 8.
And so are you by yourself?
I'm by myself.
So you're going to haul ass.
And I got to drop a car off. So I drive about 100 going down to Sacramento. And I'm calling. Did I call you to come caddy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. And you denied me. That's why I got through. Mm-hmm. And so I'm calling my Rolodex to see if I can find a caddy for the next day. Called my caddy master, who I caddied under at Interlaken for 4 or 5 years out there through college. He took the day off on Monday, switched the shift to come caddy. But I get on this flight, and I get on the flight from Sacramento to Seattle. And that all went good, and then my flight from Seattle to MSP got delayed and delayed and delayed. Wasn't taken off till 2:55 a.m., which I fly quite a bit, and there aren't many flights that take off after.
If they say they're going to be delayed by 3 hours,
yeah, I'm like,
probably not going off at 3 hours.
This thing ain't taking off. And so I kind of set a few alarms, fall asleep on the next to the gate. Actually fell asleep in the Delta lounge, and I got woke up by a Delta employee and said, you got to leave because we're shutting down the lounge.
They're closing her down. We got to prep for breakfast here in a couple hours.
Go to the gate, pass out, set an alarm, get on the flight, and got home. Went home, changed real fast. Saw my kids and my wife for 20 minutes, drove up to Victory Links, got there 20, 30 minutes before tee time, hit 8 balls, and went and teed it and got through.
By the way, so for the people that are listening, I mean, to Monday qualify into a PGA Tour event is insanely difficult. The people that are trying to qualify are people that have won on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple people have played and won PGA Tour events that were in that Monday qualifier.
I had a very, very interesting moment. So throughout the Monday, I teed off at like, I want to say 11, because I had asked them if I could get a late tee time because otherwise I can't play because my red eye wouldn't have got home in time. So they gave me a later tee time, 11 o'clock. Tee off, play 8 holes, and rain delay. I'm 1 under at the time. I'm like, so my caddy master who's caddying for him, like, let's go.
Wanted to bail.
I'm like, let's call it a day. I think it's going to take 6-7 under to get in. He goes, no. We're not leaving. And so we wait out rain delay. I play 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And now I'm 3 under, another rain delay.
You eagled 9, right?
No, par 9. Birdie 9.
Okay.
Birdie 9. So I'm 3 under through 13 holes. I'm like, okay, we got 5 holes to go. We got to at least shoot 3 under on 5 holes to have a chance. 14 was a drivable par 4. End up making par there. 15, I had a wedge in my hand, make par there. Then 16, I got backtracked. So second rain delay. The group behind us had Ben Crane, Jonas Blixt, and someone else. Jonas Blixt and the other guy bailed. So Ben Crane couldn't play by himself, so he joined our group. Let's backtrack to 2022, 3M. 2022, Eric got hurt, and I didn't have a bag, and Ben Crane got in the field. So Ben Crane calls me through a caddy who recommended me, who I'm pretty close with, Joel Stock, who now caddies for Will Zalatoris. And Ben Crane called me, ended up working for him. On Wednesday, he wasn't in the Pro-Am, so we went over to Victory Links, which is where I qualified.
No way.
So long story short, I caddied for Ben Crane last year.
In that qualifier?
No.
Or just in a practice round?
In a practice round, just playing at Victory Links. And that was the only time I've ever seen the course. I saw like four or five holes. We just went and played a few holes. And I'll never forget the time where it's pumping that day. And it's probably blowing 30 miles an hour. We got 150 into this hole, and he goes, you like 7-iron here? I go, no. I'm like, it's pumping in our face. Like, you got to flight this thing. Like, I'm like on a 5. He goes, you know what? You don't have to fucking disagree with me with every single club I hit. I've won on the PGA Tour 5 fucking times. And I'm like, sorry, bud. I'm just giving you my opinion. You know?
Yeah.
You can take it or leave it. All right? He ends up missing the cut. Fast forward to 2023. We're paired together. Okay, we're both 3M.
Have you guys spoken since then? Probably.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm very friendly. Like, okay. Yeah. Hey, I can look, like I said before, I can look myself in the mirror at the end of the day and say, you know what, I gave it my all.
Was it a 5?
Yeah, he hit 7-iron about 20 yards short.
I love that.
Is it because his hat was too big and he's worried to swing a bigger club?
Yeah, I mean, no, it's pumping in the face. I mean, yeah. It is pumping.
So his hat stayed on his head.
I don't think we were able to wear hats. It was blowing so hard.
Okay, got it.
And so fast forward, we're both 3-under going into play, and I ended up getting – we exchanged scorecards, and I ended up getting his, and then he had to sign my scorecard at the end, and it was like
– And you qualified, he did.
It was like one of these – ting.
Yeah. I've won 0 times on the PGA Tour.
But I beat you today.
Yeah, that's right.
What was the final – so what did you shoot in the final four – was that 4 or 5 holes?
So on 16, I eagled 16, par 5. Birdied 17, and then I parred 18, and then I got in a 4-for-3 playoff, and some guy kind of made a mess of it. But on 18, when I was 6-under, that's kind of when the nerves started to hit. I was like,
oh, shit, I could actually do this.
I got a chance. And that's when I told Jim Venowitz, one of the best dudes I know, who was caddying for me, I'm like, check out my shirt. He goes, yeah, what about it? I'm like, you can see my heart beating through it.
Never had that caddying?
No.
So what do you do in moments like that when you're like, adrenaline's going, heart's bumping? How do you calm yourself down? Is there something you go back to collect yourself? I know it's different in those situations, but like, what did you do in that moment?
That moment, I was kind of like talking through the shot and where the back edge is and just kind of trying to get in that moment. Obviously, you try to breathe a little bit, but it's like you might as well be underwater. You know, and then at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in is you have to commit to something. You have to commit. And if you're better off committing to the wrong thing than to nothing at all. And that's when I get nervous. I mean, I kind of play better when I'm nervous because – it's probably a little more committal. It's probably a little bit more like I'm nervous. I can't feel my legs, but like I'm going to try my best to hit it right here. And in 18, I got nervous and then signed the scorecard. And then the group behind us, a guy made birdie to force a 4-for-3. And then I stood up on the first tee at Victory Links, and it's not that hard of a driving hole. I'm like, I have no clue what shot I need to hit. And when I get really nervous, I just hit like a punch slice. And I hit this thing dick high and just slice it. And hit one down the middle, and a guy hit one in the weeds and messed around. And he's messing around, and then I'm in the middle of the fairway. I'm like, okay, this is getting really real right now. Like, don't mess this up. And
what'd you have? What'd you hit?
I had 164, no wind. I did it was a perfect nine, and hit it to 12 feet. And but that's when I was standing in the fairway and I'm watching this guy, you know, mess around, and that's when like shank popped in my mind, fat popped in my mind. I'm like,
oh no,
oh yeah. I mean, you can't control it. I mean, sometimes they pop, you know, but that's when you let the negative thoughts come and then you just replace it with a positive one. And it's like, that was funky because, I mean, I can't tell you the last time I thought about a shank or a fat or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing about, and that's where I think me as a caddy, I become a better caddy when I play more. The more I play, the more I can put myself in their shoes and understand what they're feeling and what they're thinking is, I think I can become a better caddy.
Mm.
And so hit it 12 feet, legged it up there from 12 feet, tapped in, and Bob's your uncle.
And, I mean, you for the next 3, 4, 5 days, dude, you were, like, literally the talk of professional golf.
Everybody was so stoked.
It really was.
And I'm still stoked.
I'm that's why, like, when like, literally all this was happening, I was, like, texting Jamie. I'm like, we need to have him on the podcast, dude. Because, like, you literally were the talk of professional golf for a whole week.
I mean, the support I got from friends, family, colleagues, caddies, players. I mean, it was really, really cool.
What was the coolest text you got?
How many texts did you get?
Coolest text I got? Probably Tiger.
No, Tiger.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, if you got a text from
Tiger Woods, I was like, that's fucking...
Because I was thinking it.
Double episode.
I was thinking it. And I looked at you and I was like, there's no way. There's no fucking way. But if he did...
Coolest text I got. I got one from Keith Mitchell and probably Steve Stricker. Those were probably the coolest.
Stricker, know your dad?
Yeah.
In Wisconsin?
Really well. So... kind of tight-knit golf community, as you guys understand, you know, as it is in Minnesota, as it is in Wisconsin. So they know each other, and I see Strick every once in a while, and we've played a few practice rounds with him when this was 2019, 2020, when he was still playing the PGA Tour a little more often.
Is there anybody better?
No, not in my opinion. He's a super dude, good dad, good husband. So went through ups and downs in his career and handled it like a just with peer class. And
he's got it pretty dialed in on Champions Tour, man.
Yeah. And, you know, you can learn a lot from that. And that's where, you know, when he struggled early in his career, it's just like, don't give up. You know, you see this girl who won the British Open, Lily Avu. You know, she's won 2 majors this year. And they show 2, 3 years ago, she was 1,400 in the world or something. And now she's number one in the world. And it's just like, you don't know when your time's coming. Look at Lucas Glover.
Yeah.
No kidding. We played with Lucas Glover at the Travelers, which I can't recall what week that was, but it might have been, it was a few weeks before the John Deere when he just started to take off. And I remember talking with his caddy, Tom, and it's just like, yeah, he's playing okay. He's just not playing great. And I'm just like, then you look, you know, 6 weeks down the road. And
I mean, he might be on the Ryder Cup team.
I think he should be. He should be. I mean, the dude flat out stripes it. And now that he's got a little magic wand, it's like, okay.
He made some putts yesterday, didn't he?
Talk about your all-time equipment change, man.
Yeah.
He went from a blade to like a broomstick, man. He's freaking rolling the rock.
Yeah. But all in all, I mean, 3M was a super week, and then for the tour and Hollis Kavner to be able to pair us together.
So brilliant, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. I mean, and you guys are friends with Ryan Moore too, right? So you guys play with Ryan Moore?
We're not super close with Ryan Moore.
Okay. So
little story there is my brother had been fired from Austin Smotherman before the week of John Deere. So he filled in for Sangmoon Bay 1 week. Then he filled in for Patrick Rogers during the week of Barracuda, and they lost in a playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lined up to caddy for then Ryan Moore at the 3M. So once I qualified, there was a phone call made to Ryan. It was like, hey, listen, got kind of a weird situation here. My brother qualified. I'd love to caddy for him. Be kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Did that. and then randomly got they paired Eric and I together, and Ryan Moore was with us too. So
so that was just totally random.
Totally random.
Oh my gosh. So your brother, who was caddying for you, was supposed to be caddying for Ryan Moore, who you were playing with.
Yes.
And you can't make this shit up, man. That's unreal.
We okayed it with Ryan Moore's manager, who's Derek Bolin, who's a great dude, and manages like Joel Damon and a few other guys on tour. He's like, dude, it's fine. I'll fill in for the week. So Derek, his manager, filled in for Ryan Moore, and my brother and I were able to kind of spend a few days together.
Once in a lifetime, man.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
Hopefully not, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, that's a pretty incredible thing.
Yeah.
Can I tell you that?
I hope it happens a million more times.
I was traveling. That's why I couldn't loop.
But it wouldn't be as good.
No.
Wouldn't be.
The amount of texts that I got from, like, all over the world of, like, look what's going on. Because I found out on the show that you had made.
Hey, he was sitting right there.
Yeah, he was sitting right there. It's like,
there's a lot of things I love about you. But the fact that you rocked running shoes.
I was going to ask your outfit.
Mad props. When did you decide to tie those things?
They're right here, dude. I mean, look at these things. They're just gold.
Those are nasty. Oh,
that's awesome.
I'm under the interpretation. I buy about two pairs of shoes a year. We're two sets. I got two sets of these Nike Gore-Tex I wear for about 180 days, and then I buy two pair, and then I wear another 180 days, and...
And you've always played. What do you play? You always play in running shoes.
Yeah. I don't wear golf shoes because some guy asked me in an interview, he goes, so can we ask you why you wear running shoes? I go, well, prove to me that I play better in golf shoes. He goes, okay. Well, why do you wear them untied? I go, well, prove to me I play better with them tied.
Somebody sent me a picture. I'm like, still, what a match. It was so awesome.
Great.
So how do you go from obviously professional caliber golfer, and then you play with Jamie and I assume your buddies, and like you want to play more to get better at golf. Like, is it different or is it all just the same to you?
You know what? It's at the end of the day, it's all the same. At the end of the day, there's, you know, tee markers on the tees and fairways are cut shorter than the rough, and there's fairway bunkers and the pins are on the green. Go play golf. And I think you can dive into it a little bit more at the professional level and, you know, what it all entails. But at the end of the day, the job really remains the same. And how fast can you get the ball in the hole? And, you know, what shots do you have at your disposal? And, you know, all those things.
And kind of a weird question too. Like, what do you enjoy more? Like, do you enjoy going out with your buddies and playing for merch, or like, do you really like the competitive, you know, like money's on the line here. I'm playing against, you know, top golfers, you know, which be careful. Jamie's grinning too. He's hoping you answer a certain way.
I would say there's a balance. The enjoyment, you know, from winning, is much better when you're playing competitively. But also the downfall from not playing good in a tournament is much larger. Where when I go play with Jamie or buddies, you hang around the middle line, whether you win or lose, you know, quite often.
But the nerves are still there, right?
We can call them nerves, but they don't hover too far.
Speaking of hovering, so we played once, and I beat you on 13 for closest two for a compliment. You're like, fuck that. I'm not playing for a compliment. But Eric, of course, lost too, which was awesome. And then 14.
Do you remember my compliment?
No, you refused to do it. You're like, I'm not playing I'll play for a hat.
That's a lie.
Dude, verbatim, you lost a hat to me on 13 because you spun it off the front right. I stuck it, of course.
Of course.
Eric pulled it 24 feet left because you weren't on his bag.
24 feet?
Yeah. Be horrible.
You might remember.
I think he's trying to shape it. It didn't work. So you lost. There was no compliment, but you must remember we played more than once for compliments. Yeah. And obviously, I've beaten you more than once. What was the compliment?
I think you're an amazingly, genuine dude. And
I like that. Thank you.
You make people around you better.
You did say that. You're right.
That's a very accurate statement, too.
Right.
But we were back to hovering because you used the word hover. We went to 16.
What happened on 14 and 15, though?
Immaterial. I mean, I think I had strokes on both holes, and I think we probably pushed. Get to 16, and we're playing from the back. It was 196,
yep.
Right? And I think you went first on 15 because you guys were playing from the back, and I was playing. It was you and Timmy and Eric from the back, and I was playing from the blues with Roy, right?
Right.
Yep.
And, dude, you hovered over that fucking golf ball forever. It was 196, 6-iron, I think.
Hey, when you got ADHD, you don't. Sometimes it's tough to pull the trigger.
But it was so long. Even Eric looked at me. He's like, what the fuck? I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't know what to say. And you made a pass, that you guys call it, right? Made a pass. And like right after you made the pass, you're like, how the fuck do you like that, Rue? Boom, boom. It's a jar one at 16 Winsong.
I remember.
Yeah.
I'll never forget.
And that cost me $500, I think.
You, Eric, Timmy, and Roy.
Yeah, that was a nice little win.
That was.
They brought Coronas down to the green on 16. It's still a favorite picture. It's on my Instagram. If people want to find it, where's the camera? Find me on Instagram. I don't know what my handle is. But that's on my golf one. It's on my golf Instagram. Find
you
that
have
one.
Two Instagrams.
I do. Golf and other. Yeah. I haven't contributed since you made that hole in one.
Well, whose idea was it to up the 20 club game from 100 to 500? Well,
we're standing on the seventh tee, and I go, guys, I forgot to ask, are we playing $100 hole-in-ones? And Eric goes, screw $100 hole-in-ones, $500 hole-in-ones. I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it'll never happen.
Yeah. So I had to pay $450 because you were down $50 to me for a hat.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, you traded the hat in.
I might have to check the Venmo transaction.
It was. You can look it up.
I usually like cash, but
I was carrying on $450 for sure. That was a good day, though.
That was a fun day. Winsong is, you know, my favorite place to play in the cities, and can't beat it. It's just got a vibe around it. The golf course is always good, always in good shape. Can hit different shots around there.
Who'd you play with the last time you were at Winsong?
Last time I was at Winsong, I played with Eric, James Milner, and James Milner coach something Dean.
Stephen Dean. Yeah, Dino.
Yeah.
Dino's stuff.
Not a bad crew.
This was before I had qualified, and Dino kept telling me, he goes, dude, you got to go play.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. And so then qualified for 3M, so it was kind of like he had messaged me and I had seen that text above it, and it's kind of funny.
How did you guys meet?
How did we meet?
That day.
Yeah, the day that.
That's the first time Fields you two started, ever met.
Yeah. Yes. I walked into the Winsong I was going to work in the back, and Roy's like, hey, Jamie, what are you doing? I'm like, I got a bunch of stuff. I had to grab stuff from my locker. I might work. He's like, we're going to go play. I'm like,
does
no.
Roy and Eric have a connection from South Africa?
Timmy Peterson. Oh, no, it's not South African. Timmy works for Roy, right? Mm-hmm. And Roy's like, hey, I'm going to go play. I'm like, no fucking way. He's like, I'm going to go play with Van Roy. And I'm like, yes fucking way. So I scraped my
cancel
day.
Cancel my meetings.
We met that day. And with Timmy Peterson, he's a sick player.
Yeah, he's good too.
Sick. And, I mean, anytime you spend time with Cebu, it's a gift. Then you add.
Cebu is one of the. Cebu is.
A gift.
A top guy at Winsong,
so
for sure.
The Winsong guys will appreciate this because I tell this story every time I come up to 15 now, and people are like, no way. Do you remember when Eric hit it right in that big bunker?
On 15.
And he hit, it was a 178 pin, and he hit 7-iron and launched it and hit it to the back of the green and spun it all the way back to the pin, which was front.
Stop.
And yes. And I looked at you, and you're like, he's a really good bunker player. No fucking shit. He must have hit a 196 and spun it back.
Playing from the championships, hit it in the front right bunker, the one that's normally like 220 away, but it's probably 300 from there. And then hit a 7-iron out of it.
To the back of the green and spun it all the way to the front.
Which is a probably 30-yard deep green, right?
Insane. And you were in the fairway, and I look. Like, yeah, he's a really good bunker player.
He
is a good fairway bunker player. I believe it. We got to get him to believe it more.
Just say it with conviction.
Is that it?
Yeah. You become a better caddy from just being on this show.
So
love it.
Question for you, just self-serving here, as we're all members at Winsong. How does Winsong stand up from the championship tees?
It's good. It's very, very fair, yet enough challenge. Where the three courses that, from a professional level, that can really stand up from the back tees are Winsong, Hazeltine, and Olympic Hills. Those are the three ones that can challenge you from in terms of distance and what's required off the tees, what's required into the greens, what's required around the greens, and then most of all the shapes of the course. Mm-hmm. You know, the greens are always good out there at all three places. I'm a big fan of the vibe. It's not super stuffy, very welcoming, low-key, kind of roll in there and doesn't feel like you're walking on eggshells.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we're a little bit biased, but I mean, there's no place better to me.
Yeah, it's great.
Wait till the new course comes. I mean, that's, I think after being in Ireland for the last week and seeing all those tight little crossovers and seeing peoples and Rodans and little mini Biarritzes, I think the new course, I'm that much more excited about the new course.
Yeah. I mean, I don't
more excited.
I'm not more than like the existing course, but I think it's going to be nails.
We're getting a little bit off topic here, but I went and kind of went around the course. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult. Really? I know it's like 6,700 yards, but there's six par threes. And so, you change, add 250 yards to two par threes.
Par 70?
Par 70.
70.
Par yep. 70.
Six par threes, four par fives.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, I mean, some of the holes are very demanding on second shots. And
who's designing it?
Fode again. So, couple template holes.
Do you know, does Grady Meyer have any input on it?
Not yet, but we're all waiting for Grady to come back.
Grady is the creme de la creme. He is.
We're hoping.
I had this conversation with someone the other day, and Grady had got brought up, and I go, if I got married today, Grady would be in my wedding.
He's the man.
He is the best. He has, you know, the best attitude about life. He always, you know, improves a situation. He makes a situation just better. And he's smart, you know, loves some architecture. So I haven't spoke to him about this, but my guess is he's had a little bit of input.
I'd be willing to bet he probably had some input. If I had to venture a guess, but
well, now knowing he loves architecture, this course is intended to be architecturally very unique. So that would make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, there are some template holes. Like the fourth hole is a Biarritz that could play like as little as 140 or up to 230. Mm-hmm. Uphill par three.
Is that the green that's 83 yards long?
Yeah.
Grady Meyer. I'm watching you.
Oh, we're going to have you out and play. When it's up and going.
I would love to. When is it supposed to be done?
Well, they've been doing great things so far this year. They've only had to stop like 2 or 3 days. So I would venture to guess that it's going to be done sooner than anticipated. So
maybe limited play end of next year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say when the airification happens next year, which is like around the first week of August, I bet you that there's limited play there.
Do you want to be my partner in the event out there?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. Hello.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
Well, this was unreal. It really was.
Yeah. Seriously, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a really, really fun time. And just to hear some of your stories and congratulations again on 3M. I mean, what an accomplishment. Hopefully, it's many more to come down the future. I know maybe it wasn't exactly the outcome that you were hoping for, but to qualify in that manner and to have all of golf focused on you for a week is incredible. So
we're very proud.
Yeah, it was a really special week and one I'll kind of hold close to my heart for a long time. And yeah, get a little emotional about it sometimes, but it's you don't have those weeks every week. And yeah, thanks.
Right, deservedly so, man. So congrats and thanks again, man.
Thanks come for back anytime.
I'll be a Jamie Roo special guest anytime. I love talking golf. Golf's the best game in the world.
It is.
We agree. That's why we started this stupid thing.
I like this.
Thanks, Alex. Peace.